Welcome to the Militant Grind Show, where we dive deep into the journeys of those who've mastered the art of being their best selves. Every episode is a testament to resilience, dedication, and the pursuit of excellence, embodying our tagline, the most honorables. Here you'll find inspiration, insights, and strategies to elevate your life in every aspect. For more empowering content and to join our community of achievers, visit us at militantgrind.com. Let's embark on this journey together because the grind never stops. Are you ready for a radical transformation? Join the ranks of the most honorables. Our proven methods forge resilience, sharpen strategic thinking, and unlock your true potential. We'll challenge you mentally, physically, and spiritually, preparing you to overcome any obstacle. Visit militantgrindacademy.com and begin your evolution. Greatness awaits. Forge your path. Ignite your future. Most of all, join the movement.
Welcome to the Militant Grind Podcast. Today, I have a special treat for you. I have Wesley Wade, licensed clinical health counselor. Got it right, right?
Mental health counselor.
Oh, almost, mental health counselor. One word. Okay. And this brother goes on and on his TikTok about mental health. I mean, he is steadily producing, you know, and I seen one of his videos and I was like, you know, I want to reach out to him and talk to him about these topics, especially in regards to people that are neurodivergent and not really aware of their neurodivergence and like how to navigate it, dealing with that through life. You know, and I appreciate you coming on, man. Definitely want to get some insight from you because you are neurodivergent, right?
I am very neurodivergent.
Yeah, yes. I am as well. And so when I read a little bit about you, I was like, damn, I could see myself in this because I say for me growing up, right, extremely smart kid, but I had behavioral issues, you know, but then it was just like, I just didn't like to be bored. I wanted to do stuff. I wanted to be outside. I wanted to laugh. I wanted to do different things. But, you know, school taught me to conform. And I never wanted to. And teachers often said, like, you know, he's a smart kid, but he has behavioral issues, you know, and I'm really surprised they didn't try to put me on the drug. But I don't think my parents would have had that anyway. But I'm low-key kind of like surprised they didn't like ask for that, you know. So yeah, man, I definitely want to talk to you a little bit about your story. I've seen some similarities in mine, and yeah, let's go about there. So you're a 41-year-old man, right?
41-year-old brother, you got it
right. And so when did you first figure out that you were neurodivergent?
That's a good question, man, because one, it's like, when did I figure out that my brain works differently? When did I figure out the first aspect of my neurodivergence, which was like the most visible, the most observable, which would be ADHD, right? But then right. It's also the concept of neurodivergence, which is also a separate thing, in my opinion, too, right? And so, first of all, what you said right there at the beginning just now of like growing up, having these experiences, being smart, but not really fitting in that space, that is 100% my space. And I feel that a lot of us, especially folks who are Black, and I call it the band, right? Members who are people who are Black and neurodivergent, we have that experience as Black folks, but mm-hmm. then we also have that experience as neurodivergent folks, and we don't realize that Black experience we have is moderated. We would say that in like an academic sense. Moderated means it influences the strength of that reaction negatively or positively, right? And mm-hmm. so it moderates that relationship that we have or that experience that we have in our Blackness. I didn't understand that until later, but I did notice that in middle school, like all my friends were ADHD. And I'm like, okay, so I'm probably ADHD by association, because if the phrase all birds of a feather flock together, like why are all my friends like this? Like that has to make some kind of sense. But no one ever picked it up in me. No one ever got me tested or anything like that. And I had a family member who had got tested and they were ADHD and dyslexic. And I was like, well, okay, well, that person's doing the same thing that I'm doing. So this is clearly the case, but no one notices it. I'm just going to keep pushing through. Right.
Right.
And so it was probably about in middle school, but also like there's a CBS article I was in that CBS picked up. And in the article, one of the things I said, it is a quote in the article. I said, when I was in middle school, I had started smoking Snoop Dogg volumes of weed. This is just, and so when we see that, we see like, oh man, this kid is a problem. He's got behavioral issues. He's skipping class to go do this. What is going on? But I'm a kid. Kids are doing things like that, and even adults too, but it's different with kids. When kids are doing that, there is something going on in their life that is not gelling, that they are not fitting with. And that's the first, that is the first symptom of like what you're really seeing. Like it could be a mental health issue. It could be neurodivergence. It could be abuse and trauma and stuff going on at home. But if you see a kid who's out here in middle school just smoking a lot of weed or doing whatever they're doing, that child needs some help, man, right? And so that was me. That was me. So I would say probably in middle school is when I first started realizing that I have a neurospicy brain. It was ADHD. But it wasn't until I got much older that I really found out there's a lot more going on here.
Were you like the class clown growing up and, you know, the talking to town, you know, in middle school?
Well, I don't shut up, right? I just ramble. Like, this is what my TikToks are. Like what you said, this brother goes on and on. You could also connotate that. And my TikToks are long because I just open up my phone and start talking. I don't, like, I'll think a little bit. I'll go for walks. I'll think a little bit about what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And then I just open up my phone and talk. They're not planned. They're not scripted. I just talk, man. And so class, when I was in school, yeah, right. So I describe it like this. Like neurodivergence is a lot of things, but one of the things that we look at neurodivergence is we call it a spiky profile. So like if you test this on, I don't like saying intelligence tests because intelligence tests tend to be mired in a lot of racism, but like there's one that we use a lot for this called the Wechsler Adult Intelligence Scale. I think about it as a strength scale, right? And so it has like four different dimensions of strengths. But if you looked at someone who was neurodivergent, like their scores are going to connect and make a relatively flat line. Mm-hmm. For the folks who are neurodivergent, that line is going to have a huge amount of disparity between the strengths and the weaknesses. So it's like what we call spiky, right? So like I have a super spiky profile. My perceptual reasoning is like at a very, very high level, like upper 90th percentile level. Mm-hmm. And my processing speed is low. Like processing speed is perceptual reasoning is like pattern recognition. Processing speed is like how quickly it takes you to think of something and have a response. Well, it takes me a long time to think of something and have a response because I see so many patterns and connections of stuff. And that's a lot of us neurodivergent folks. But what happens when we get in class, we get called out, we're paying attention to something, but we're having a super deep thought about like something else that doesn't seem related. Right. And then the teacher calls on us and is, you know, might put some pressure on us. I was in predominantly white schools, sometimes the only black kid in the class. And so there's this pressure that you feel in this situation to answer in a hurry, and you can't. So instead, what you can do in a hurry is make a joke. Is be fun. I can be, and that's what that's part of what happens with that. So was I a class clown? Hell yes. I was a fantastic class clown, right? Fantastic class clown, and just acted out. Like I was just argued with teachers, but the thing was I was right a lot of the times when I was arguing with the teachers, and that's what made most teachers really mad. When I got in a lot of trouble growing up, man. And that's a big reason why.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying, man, because I was always pulled out because I was daydreaming, you know, like, you know, you're not paying attention. And I'm like, man, I don't know. I'm just deep in thought, you know, something random, but I just always love being deep in thought, you know, and yeah. I'm like, what you're talking about doesn't excite me, is boring. So my mind has to be active thinking about something, you know, something of substance. And I learned with myself that if I'm not like into something, I won't be into it. You know, like I cannot learn something that I don't want to learn just to pass a grade, you know, or to get a passing grade. Like that's not how my mind works, you know? Right. And I've noticed that in school, I was like, man, you know, I did horrible in this class, but it's just like, I didn't want to retain the information. It was useless to me.
Right.
And that's pretty interesting about our education system, is because like, to me, listening to you, it's like, okay, this person has genius level intelligence, but they're put into this box, you know, where they're supposed to conform, and that kind of dumbs down their genius, you know?
Yes.
And it's like, if you like to talk, maybe you should start working on something where you could be good at talking, you know what I'm saying? Or like, you know, because to me, that's a superpower, and it's a power that a lot of people are really afraid to do. Like, some people can't talk in front of a crowd, you know, or talk on camera or talk on the phone, really. It's like, I've seen someone like literally almost get a panic attack when they were talking on camera. You know, it's kind of interesting. And so it's just like, you have these capabilities that were looked down on when you were a child, but now it's just like, oh, this is such an amazing gift.
Yes, yes, man. I say this to people a lot. Like, the stuff that I say now is not very different in totality than the stuff I was saying like 10 years ago. But I didn't have two master's degrees 10 years ago. I'm almost done with my PhD now, right? My dissertation. I didn't have two licenses. I didn't have two certifications. So people see that, and we're so obsessed with hierarchy and credentialism. We're like, oh man, this brother knows what he's talking about. Yes, I do know what I'm talking about. But also, the stuff that I'm seeing is the same stuff that I saw way back then. Now I just understand that what I was seeing was right.
Right.
And I see more depth to that, right? And I can explain that now. And so for me, I get a lot of anxiety and perfectionism when it comes time to write. I'm a very good writer. My dad wrote a best-selling novel in the early 90s. He was an English major. His mom was a teacher who had a black woman born in the 30s who had a college degree. Her oldest sister, my Aunt Viv, shout out to Fresh Prince. I had an Aunt Viv who was, right? I mean, I feel like that's a rite of passage for black men. So she died in 2021. She was 99 years old. She had a master's degree in chemistry, man. Like, the woman was a genius. I've never met anyone smarter than my Aunt Viv. She's the smartest person I have ever met in my life. And I know some wild, I know astrophysicists who write books about the end of the universe and stuff, and it's just pure math. She's the smartest person I've ever met in my life, man. And so this is my neurodivergence going right here, man. I was talking, I started thinking about that. It's an emotional memory. I have no idea what I was saying. this happens. Oh, writing. My perfectionism comes out in writing. I'm a good writer. I'm a very good writer. But like, if you read my writing, it sounds different from how I talk. And I've been working to make my writing more accessible, where it's not like too heady and it doesn't have all these like words and stuff. Because when I write, I can slow down. I can organize my thoughts, right? But when I talk, my mind is going like this.
Yeah.
And I can't always keep up. And it's one reason why I don't like formalities, because it's much easier to convey information in everyday language, to use slang, to use colloquialisms. And people understand that a lot more. And the purpose of communication isn't to sound smart. It's for people to understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So I'm leaning into talking a lot more, which is why I've enjoyed TikTok. I love Twitter. Twitter is like my favorite social media space. I have met some amazing people on Twitter, got some amazing book recommendations that I never would have got if I was anywhere else. But TikTok has really been my space because it's all video. I feel like it's like, if you're dyslexic, you're going to love TikTok. Like, that's just what it is. And that is part of my neurospiciness, man, because I can just get on here and I can just talk. So like, every post that I do could easily be a paper that I would write, but it would take me like, if I didn't have the perfectionism, it'd take me like a day or 2 days to write it. But I have the perfectionism, so it'd like take me 2 weeks. And it's because I'm just constantly editing myself and pushing myself. And it's a lot, man. You know, so we have to work on just being more authentic and just leaning in. Because, yeah, like you said, the school system, it's meant to condition us for the world of employment, right? I mean, like, that's not a secret. That's what it's based off of. So why are we letting our children go through it unchallenged, right? And that's kind of my perspective on that. But I had to realize how to challenge myself out of it. And that's what's kind of going on.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. Definitely feel that. And it's crazy, like, me listening to you talk about how your father wrote a book and you have a smart auntie and grandmother and stuff like that. And I've noticed that people that are mixed with all of these intelligent people end up being like super intelligent too. But then it's like, sometimes the intelligence is so much where it's like you don't know how to handle it in your brain. You know what I'm saying? Because it was like all of those genes and that DNA are inside of you. But then it's like, okay, how do I calm down my genius? How do I work with it? You know what I mean? It's like a lot. You know what I mean? And I've noticed that between like a lot of people, even my son. Like my son is like super smart at certain things, and at certain things he kind of lacks. But if you talk to his teachers about him, every single teacher he's ever had was like, oh my God, he's a genius. He's so smart. He's this and he's that. And I'm just like, what do y'all see that I don't? You know what I'm saying? Because I'm like, what is it? Because he had a speech delay, but it's like the way his mind works and how creative he is, it's kind of like, it's unbelievable. You know, like the way he draws, the way he does this, the way he could read, he could remember things off the top of his head. And I'm like, well, his daddy is me. Yeah.
That sounds just like me. Yeah. I had a speech delay. Like when I was 3 years old, I couldn't even say the word cookie. I'd be like, cook. And meanwhile, we were living in like a hood in Baltimore at that point in time. Uh-huh. And this black girl next door, who was a year younger than me, be like, hi, how are you doing? And I'm like three. And I'm like, I had super speed, which is clear signs of autism growing up. Doesn't mean it's always autism, but it is a very like a basic characteristic of that. Mm-hmm. And like on my mom's side, My we call him Pep, my maternal grandfather, he's one of the first people to work for NASA. Everyone knew he was one of the smartest people.
Really?
My parents grew up down the street from each other. But this is the other thing too. I believe everyone is like this. I believe everyone has brilliance. We just don't understand how to tap into it. We have a lot of trauma that prevents us from being confident about it. Like this world is oppressive, man. This world is oppressive and it beats the crap out of us, especially as black folks who are members of the band Black and Neurodivergent. It weighs on us and it prevents us from being ourselves. And maybe like Joyce DeGruy or something talks about this at a much more intellectual level than this, but like my personal theory is black folks, especially black folks descended from enslaved Africans, we had to tap into our genius in order to survive. Mm-hmm. If we didn't tap into our genius, we wouldn't have gotten to the place that we are. We created the American, the dominant American culture we created. And like we came over here and they we were brought over here and they intentionally put us with other Black Africans who didn't speak the same language, didn't have the same tradition. So we couldn't form together an uprise against them. But we still did. We figured out how to do it, right? We figured out how to work the land over. Like we built most of the systems these people use, right? We built these systems here, right? And you know, other black and brown folks and Asian folks, like they had a lot to do with this too. We all have our own stories, but Black Americans, man, we built this damn thing, man. We built this thing, and that it was a wild example of our intelligence, and we were bred. I mean, chattel slavery, we were bred. Like, so literally, like, our intelligence was being shifted and shaped and shaped to where it is now. But we have to learn how to tap into that. Like, I do not think there's anything special about me. There is nothing special about me except that I have a big mouth and I like to talk. Like, I just say things that people don't want to say. But everybody has their own area of brilliance, man. We got to figure out a way to tap into it.
Yeah. It's crazy that you say that because like, I thought my son was autistic, but then talking to his teachers and the doctors, they're like, no, he's not. I'll be like, but he's, they're like, I mean, I'm seeing the signs and everything. And they're like, he's not. But now that he's a little older, I'm like, oh, okay. I see what they were talking about. Because for me, I don't observe kids. I'm not licensed. You know what I'm saying? I don't even know what's going on. But for people that observe kids, they kind of could see like traits in certain kids that'll be like, oh no, this kid is very bright, or this kid is this, or this kid is that. And I was listening to Elon Musk's audiobook, right? And they were just talking about
how, book?
Yeah, Elon Musk.
I didn't know he had a book. I'm not a big fan of the dude, but like
Now he's neurodivergent too. He has, I think, Asperger's.
Oh yeah, he's super which is just autism, right? I don't mean to interrupt you, but like a side point is DSM-4 moved to the DSM-5, mm-hmm. and we got rid of that diagnosis of Asperger's, right? Which that name came from this dude who was a Nazi and all this other stuff. But we got rid of that definition that diagnosis of Asperger's to where it's just autism spectrum disorder. And so the thing to think about that I challenge people on is the first person ever to be diagnosed with autism died in 2023.
What?
He was in his 80s. Yes, like this is new. Our understanding of this is new, right? And so if you think about racism, okay, we live in this racist world, country, and Asperger's was separated from autism spectrum disorder as like this higher intellectual thing. Like, yes, my child's an Aspie. And it gave people like pride in saying this, right? And the reality is, number one, they're not the same. They're the same thing. It is autism. It's just a different aspect of the spectrum of autism. But in the history of this country, do you think that they were diagnosing Black people with a condition that indicated we had higher intelligence? Of course not, because they don't see us like that. So a lot of us are that, right? I am that. My grandfather, who was one of the first people to work for NASA, was that. I don't know if my Aunt Viv was that. She's just, that woman was just on a different level. But like, that's what it is, man. Like the diagnosis process is super subjective. These things change and evolve over years. That's why we have different editions of the DSM. Like we're on the DSM-5 now. It changes like every 5 years or so. Like there's the racism and the discrimination is baked into the process of this too, right? And so that's personally why people like Elon Musk frustrate me, because the dude grew up a millionaire. He grew up with all these advantages, man. I actually like Bill Gates as an example better, because he is honest about the privileges that he had growing up and how those privileges allowed him to get to the place that he is. Mm-hmm. And I need people to be honest, man. If people can't be honest and own that, and I'm not really into what they got to say, to be real.
I mean, it's low-key all of them though, really. Like even Jeff Bezos, you know, like, yes. I mean, I've been watching Shark Tank for years and I'm like, what? Somebody gave you $150,000 to start your business? Damn. You know, like, well, I have investors and they invested up to $1 million. I'm like, what? But, yeah, you know, yeah. We're a disadvantaged class, so we don't have the resources of people that could invest and donate that money into our ideas. You know what I'm saying? Exactly. And I was just like, man, like, it really just gets to me sometimes. You know, I'm like, man, our people could barely afford life insurance. And these people are taking $100,000 and invested into somebody's idea. We are losing. You know what I mean? Like, golly.
Great analogy for that. And I know you work out. I don't work out as much as I should, but like, think about this. When you see a celebrity, A-list celebrity, they have millions, they got net worth of like 200 plus million, right? Yeah. And they're in great shape. Are you impressed by that?
No.
So why are we impressed when these people have these businesses, they make all this money, and they come from money? It's no right. different, man, right? Right? You know what I'm saying? I'm not impressed by that. I'm not impressed by it at all. I'm impressed by my homeboys who are dope boys who grew up in the hood and then they went to management and they're out here doing the thing. I'm impressed by that. That's what I'm impressed by.
Yeah, but you're exactly right, because at the end of the day, a lot of those people that, you know, have those advantages or that lifestyle, if they was placed in the same positions that we were, they probably would have never made it. So I feel like that tells you like that person has a skill or is like, you know, greater or something, you know, I don't know how to say it, than that person. You know what I mean? Because it's like, if you came from where I came from, you probably wouldn't have made it. You know, you had all of these advantages, like, you know, and I live in a very affluent neighborhood now, and I, you know, I see it. I'm just like, wow, like, hoo-wee, these kids pulling up in Teslas, Ferraris, you know, all kind of cars. So it's like any idea they have, they could probably get it funded, you know? And I'm thinking about all of the ideas me and my homeboys had. Like one of my friends in 2010 was like, we should start a service where it's like people could order food and you could deliver it to their house. And next thing you know, DoorDash and Postmates came out. And he was like, man, I was telling y'all. Da, da, da. But I'm like, I mean, at the end of the day, we don't have the resources or the money.
We don't have the capital and infrastructure. We don't have it, man. Like, this is what I say to people who, I don't argue with a lot of people about that stuff at these, but in my 30s, I did a lot. But this is what I would say is, you have all of this, right? So even if you take racism, discrimination out of it, we are somewhere between 12 and 14%. Like sometimes it was going up towards 14, then it like went down a little bit. Like, I don't remember where it's at, but we're around there. There's a little over 40 million Black people in the US. There are over 240 million white people in the US. So just the sheer numbers of that.
Yeah.
It's off, man. And so this is what we are taught. And then when you add racism and discrimination and on top of that in an institutionalized and systemic manner, that 40 million, that includes children, that includes people who are out of the workforce, right? And so really you're probably talking about like 20 million Black adults in the workforce. That's not a lot of people. When you probably got about, 240 million plus white folks, you probably got about like 180 million of them who are in the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
We're not like, you can't.
No, those numbers do matter. And some people don't understand that. I'm like, we're such a small portion of the population and we don't have a lot of resources and we get discriminated against. So to me, it is like super hard and a large barrier to entry. And I see it because I'm like, these people have the skills, they have the talents, but if they only think that Black people could be their customers, they're only marketing to a small percentage of people. And this is like, say with motivational speakers, right? Tony Robbins could market to anybody. He, like you said, he has 200 million people that look like him that he could market to. All we have is 20. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, and then it's like, if you try to market to the 200 million, you're probably going to face a little discrimination.
Exactly. Exactly. What happened to me when I got into, so I didn't do well in school. Like I met, like literally, if I can track this, at every significant juncture, there was a Black woman who saw something in me and like put her some energy in me and helped me progress. So like, and when I was in high school, it was my 11th grade English teacher. This Black woman was amazing. She had won Teacher of the Year and all this sort of stuff. The first day of class, this is what she would do, man. She would write on the board. She would write B-I-T-C-H in big letters. And she would say, that's right. That's who I am. Go tell your parents that's what I said. Because she was strong and she was firm. And these little white boys would get so uncomfortable. And they would, this woman's a bitch, right? And they would say all that. But really, she was just she was confident like a man. And she was brilliant. And so she came to me and she talking about class clown stuff. She came to me and she was like, Wesley, you are too smart to be acting this dumb in my class. I needed someone to speak that bluntly to me in a loving way. I had people who spoke that bluntly to me, but they were mean. They were in my life, like in my familial life, right? And so I followed her plan and she got me into NC State University for undergrad, which is where I went. But what I had noticed was after I got out of school, after I struggled through 10 years in corporate, and then I go back to grad school, I find my way there. What I realized is when I write, I wasn't writing for a Black audience. I was writing for a white audience because I had grown up in these white spaces, always constantly trying to have them see me. Like, look at me, look at me. We talk about the pick me culture all the time. Like, oh, that's a pick me. America is all about a pick me. Shark Tank is literally, hey, y'all pick me. Right. Remember growing up, we had Star Search. Hey, y'all pick me. Like our whole culture is a pick me culture. And then we laugh at people because they're saying that's what we're bred to do. Mm-hmm. But when you think about it, that pick me culture is saying, hey, white people, look at me, invest in me. Hey, white people, look at me. Look how good I am. And I realized that's what I was doing in my writing. So I had actually stopped writing for a while so I could learn how to write to myself. I don't have to overly explain things to folks that like Black folks already know. I'm writing for Black folks, right? If I'm writing for a wider audience, then I do that. But I had to look at myself and see that in that moment. And that hurts us from understanding our brilliance. It hurts us from understanding how we navigate in this world, from seeing the economies of scale that we are just a dramatically smaller percentage of this population. And when you add in these other variables in there, it creates this experience where we got to figure out a way to make it. And we do in all these brilliant ways, but like people stop us and these things happen and it limits us. And that's not an excuse. It's a reason. It's just a fact. It's just a fact, man. And so I just wish that people would embrace that a lot more, man. It helped me to change myself, to see myself in new ways and to apply myself in new ways, but also to see everyone else in new ways, man. It's why I will always believe that everybody is brilliant. We just haven't figured out how to tap into it, man.
Yeah. And that's one thing that I'm recognizing as a father of four people, that they're all different in their own way. You know, it's like I'm talking about each and every one of them are extremely different. And I have to basically manage all of these different personalities and bring out greatness out of all of them, but also recognizing that like they have to be authentic to themselves. You know what I'm saying? And it's just like, if you want to play basketball, like my oldest daughter, I need a basketball. I want to learn. Okay, cool. Do that. Be the best. My youngest daughter, daddy, I want to paint my nails and I want to wear a dress and be a princess. Okay. Here's some makeup. Here's a mirror. Go ahead. Do your thing. You know what I'm saying? And like, oh, my son likes to play video games and all of these. Okay, cool. Here's a video game. Do your best. Win. You know what I'm saying? Right. And I'm like, and I feel like that's the best way to bring about, you know, their genius and just humanity as a whole, because I absolutely hate it the way people will be like, something is wrong with me because I think different. But then I've also noticed that I'm not different to people that are high functioning. When it comes to people that are high functioning, there's an understanding there. And I was like, maybe I'm just not a part of the right crowd. Because if you talk to somebody with a small mind and you tell them your idea, not to say anybody's mind is small, but just as a reference.
Like they're limited. You know, well, they're limited, right?
Yeah, they're limited. They're going to be like, oh, man, this dude must be crazy. And this is and the third. And what's wrong with him? And they don't understand you. And then the way they talk about you, it's just like, man, something must be wrong. Maybe I'm thinking too big, or maybe I'm this, or maybe I'm that. But then when you go around people that are, you know, like of your ilk, they'll be like, man, you could do that. Wow, that sounds amazing. Wow, I like that. That's a great idea. Like, I was sitting one time in the jacuzzi with the man who won an Academy Award for producing a documentary. And I'm producing a documentary, right? And I was just telling him my ideas. And he was like, that's a great idea. And you should do it. I'm like, wow, I already thought of this. Wow, we just became friends. And this dude's a multimillionaire. And I'm just like, man, I could really hang out with him. But then it's like, with that being said, I was like, okay, I know what place I am in this world just based off of who I can connect to. You know, because I say, you might be like, oh, I love writing a lot like this. And somebody be like, oh, man, you talk too much. Why are you doing all that? Why are you talking online? Man, you shouldn't do that. Why don't you do something like this or do something like that? And I was one of those people, too, that loved to just write on my Facebook. I was a hell of a Facebook social activist, but I felt like that helped me get my thoughts out, because I'll be thinking things and it's going so fast. But when I sit there and write and I digest it, the way it comes out is a lot more clear. And then, you know, I got popular off of that. And then somebody was just like, man, all you do is write on Facebook. Why don't you do? I'm like, I don't understand what the problem is. Like, I'm getting popular. I'm increasing my business. People know who I am. And number one, I'm not asking you for money.
I'm not, right.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
same thing for, I am in a PhD program now, finishing a PhD. The only reason why I'm not done is because of like all this stuff going on in my life. But the reason why I'm in a PhD program is because I used to write on Facebook all the time, man. And one of my brothers, I've known this brother since 2012. I won't say his name in here in case you don't want his name mentioned, but like, he's the number one reason why I'm in a PhD program, man. If he hears this, he knows who he is. He was a full and tenured professor by the time he was 40. He was the only non-white person in the clinical psych program at a major university that everyone knows. It's at UNC Chapel Hill. And the brother was humble. I knew this brother for a year before he even mentioned he was a professor or anything like that. And I would write all this stuff on Facebook. He's like, man, your writing is really good, man. I was like, man, really? You think that? He'd be like, yeah. And he's like, man, you ever thought about like, you know, going back to grad school and stuff, man, you could get a PhD. That's like that. And he's on my dissertation committee now, man, even though he's at a different school. That brother, just what you just said right there, inspired me, right? Because I started realizing we need to hang out with people who inspire us and motivate us, right? And so like something In the spaces I travel in, instead of saying high functioning and low functioning, we say high support needs and low support needs. Because someone like me who's labeled as high functioning, people hear that and all they hear is the functioning. All they hear is the high functioning. They think of like a Lamborghini engine, right? And someone a long time ago, I forgot what his name was. It was in the 90s. It's a white dude. He's like a psychologist, I think. And he has some great stuff about ADHD. But he's attributed with this phrase of like us folks, ADHD, and I'm going to say a lot of other neurodivergent folks too. We have Ferrari brains with bicycle brakes. Right. It's like our brains are going so fast, but man, we cannot control these things, man. This is why I ramble. This is why I do what I do. And so saying high support needs and low support needs, I'm someone with low support needs. And what that lets people know is, yeah, I'm good, but man, I have a lot more support needs than people realize, man. Like I work 20 hours a week on average. I work for myself. I worked in corporate for almost 10 years. I worked in higher ed for about 8 years. Pros and cons about both of those systems. I can't go back to those systems on a full-time basis because they just burn you, man. In higher ed, I was working like 60, 70 hour weeks, but you're getting paid like $50,000 because you don't care about the money. You're all about the students, man, right? And that's that, you just burn out. And so what I realized is I need less time working and more time managing myself. Like, so now I get to go on long walks so I can calm myself down. I get to have more time in the day so I can clean and organize my house, so I can take care of my kids, making sure they're eating good foods, right? But I had to get around people who thought differently. Because you go through this education system that tries to make you more homogenous, that tries to make you just a gear so you can go into some corporate machine and just be a mechanism to help keep that going. But then we celebrate the adults who don't conform. So then why are we trying to force our kids to conform if we're going to celebrate the ones who make it through, right? I mean, it's kind of a narcissistic complex of like, we're going to put you through this crap, but if you make it through, we're going to put you up here. And it's hard to process all of that when you are a teenager, when you are in your 20s, right? And even like in your 30s, if you don't have the resources there. The best thing that ever happened to me was failure. I had so many failures in my 20s, man. I had so many failures. If I had the success I thought I was going to have in my 20s, I probably would be a horrible person, honestly. I would be Drake, and Kendrick Lamar would be flaming me somewhere like that. I wasn't a bad person, but I was wrapped up in my ego, and I was wrapped up in not seeing life from other perspectives, right? Yeah. So I know I'm rambling on here, but like, something you were saying here about like with your kids, it really hit me because that is actually positive parenting, and people like down positive parenting. But positive parenting is like, I'm gonna look at the strengths that my kids have. I'm gonna build systems around that so they can understand how they manage themselves, how they build a system and become masters of their own routine and become masters of their own life. And when I see that they have an interest, I'm going to feed into that interest and give them what they need. I'm gonna give them love and support. That is called a safe space. People don't like that term, safe space. They're like, oh man, you've taken away people's ability to communicate and challenge each other. No, man, we learn the best. We grow the best. We develop the best when the soil is fertile, when the gardener is making sure that we're not tilted over too much, right? Like we need a safe space so that we can go challenge. So that we can go do these uncomfortable things. But we try to remove that from people and say, nah, man, you just got to tough it out. You just got to push through this thing. There's always points and times in life where we got to tough it out and push through it. That's the reality of life. But you were better prepared from that when you had the ability to learn and grow in a comfortable space that you could then challenge yourself. That's it, man. That's where we are.
That's funny, man, because I grew up with a total opposite. Like there was no such thing as a safe space. It was like, you know, my father was in the military, right? So it was just like grind, work, get up, work, 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 no rest, rest is work, 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 work. And I've noticed that like the way I started to look at work was kind of like dreadful. You know, like I hated doing things that I did not enjoy because I was forced to work on things that I didn't want to do. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, maybe that was a gift and a curse because it's like, I really, you know, I'm not like the job type of person at all. Like I hate doing things I don't want to do because I was forced to do that as a child. You know what I'm saying? And I really didn't have a safe space to be myself. And it's funny because somebody was like, well, you know, I was doing like the, you know, what do they call it? Carpentry work, like putting down tile, hardwood floors, painting, you know what I'm saying? Stuff like that. And then, you know, that's where my family comes from. And my uncle was like, you know, well, I mean, you learn how to work and you learn this and you learn that. And I was like, man, I learned how to do things that I did not want to do. There's no fucking benefit in that. Right. You know what I'm saying? Right. How does that serve me? You know what I mean? And I was just like, we look at life so selfishly. It's like, I was doing things to serve a man that needed work done on his house because he didn't want to pay anybody else, and he had sons. But did his sons want to spend?
We grew up in the same house.
Yeah, did his sons want to spend the whole summer working on the house? Hell no. I wanted to go outside. I wanted to play. I wanted to explore. You know what I'm saying? And it was just like, damn, like I didn't have that. But then I'm looking at like super high achievers and people that like achieve like great things in life. I've noticed that they have had a safe space somewhere that will like make them believe that they could achieve these super hard things. You know what I mean? And like the way I thought about life was like, you have to be, have this hard exterior everywhere you go. And you have to just punish yourself and go through all of these things in order to get better. But I was just like, that's definitely not the case at all.
It's not the case. That's American mythology, man. It's the Horatio Alger narrative from the 1800s. He's the person who wrote the rags to riches story. And we put a harder version of that on Black people, right? Mm-hmm. So like my family, I can trace it all the way back to slavery on my dad's side because my great-great-great-grandfather was born enslaved, ran away, changed his last name, learned, taught himself how to read and write, fought for the Union in the Civil War, made it through alive, bought 62 acres of land in Glen Burnie, Maryland, raised a family on that. So when I'm talking about like my grandmother had a college degree, her big sister had a master's degree, that's because they had money. They had money because they had land, right? Now, they weren't rich in a sense, like they weren't balling, right? But they had land. They knew how to hunt. They knew how to garden. I grew up hunting and fishing. I know how to garden. I have my own garden back here. Like I haven't gone hunting in a while, but and we only go after things. We're not sport hunters. We go after what we eat, right? Mm-hmm. That's how I grew up rabbit hunting. I grew up squirrel hunting. Man, I could cook up some squirrel for you that tastes so good. You wouldn't know it wasn't chicken, man. Some fried squirrel and a white wine gravy on top of some rice with some mashed potatoes. Boy, you ain't lived.
Squirrels. I probably got a squirrel in my backyard right now. So anytime you come to California, let me know. I see a squirrel and a rabbit every time I go outside.
Huh? I have not eaten squirrel since I was 10. Okay. And I'm not eating squirrel anymore unless there's like an apocalypse and we got to eat some squirrel. But like, it'll taste good. Like you can make it taste good. And so that meant it was for my dad's family. They're amazing people. They don't know how to, a lot of them don't know how to handle like emotions the way I do. Cause my mom's side is they're much more emotional people, man. They're like emotions rule them, not in a bad way. They're just deeper emotional people. And my dad's side is just, we just got to push through.
Yeah.
Well, they descended from this enslaved African who freed himself. So it was always about, you got to be hard in order to do this. And it's like, nah, man, like, you know, I mean, there's something about learning how to work hard. There's something about learning good lessons, right? There's also something about respecting the appropriate age development that a child is, right? This child is 10. They have the right to have their summers to be a kid, right? Like, it's, and so people call that soft. That's not soft, man. That's just treating the child like a child, which is what you should do, right? We're not going to treat this child like they're 30. This is a 10-year-old. They are developmentally 10. I am going to treat them like a 10-year-old. I am going to let them have, I'm not going to argue with a 10-year-old. Let me give you an example. I actually love this example, man. So like 2 months ago, we're sitting at the kitchen table having some Sunday breakfast, man. I love cooking. I love cooking, man. I cook the dope Sunday breakfast. And my daughter and my wife were arguing about something, man. And I'm like, hey, man, we don't got to argue with a 7-year-old. And then I said something. My daughter was like, well, I don't care because I'm smarter than you, right? My wife and I grew up in two different homes. Like, my wife is absolutely brilliant. She's an amazing, strong, brilliant person. First generation college student. Like, her and my dad got a lot more in common. Like, but actually, she came from a much harder background than my dad. And so it's a more of authoritarian blue collar background. Like, no, you don't speak to your dad like that, girl. I'm like, hey, whoa, it's cool. She cool. She good. She good. She's 7. I'm like, yeah, baby. So you think you're smarter than me, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Let's think about this. So I went and got a piece of paper. I came back to the table. I wrote smart on one side. I wrote knowledgeable on the other side. And I was like, hey, baby, what's the difference? Baby girl, what is the difference between smart and knowledgeable? And to her credit, she was like, she recognized that they weren't the same. This child's in second grade, right? She wrote down some things, or I told me some things. I wrote them down for smart. told me some things for knowledgeable. I was like, okay, so you see that like knowledge is something you gain, right? Mm-hmm. But then as you get older and you gain more knowledge, that knowledge actually helps you to become smarter too. She's like, yeah. So she saw that. So I was like, so by the time, like you're 7 now, when you're 14, you're going to have a lot more knowledge. You're going to be smarter. She's like, yeah. Like, and then when you're 25 too. And I was like, well, what about when you're 41? I'm 41. She was like, yeah. I was like, you're not smarter than me right now, baby. Okay. I have had a lot of time to gain some knowledge, and that has helped to develop my intelligence and my smartness. However, you were definitely smarter than I was when I was 7, without a question. Just let me help you. And so instead of challenging her and shutting her down and squashing her confidence, I was like, hey, there's nothing wrong with you saying that and challenging me. Let's think about it.
Yeah, I did that.
When I did that, my daughter, she was like, hey, thank you, Dad. Thank you, Dad. Right? Yeah. That's what we're talking about, man. We're not beating the confidence out these kids anymore, man. We're not beating the confidence out these kids anymore.
No, you have to get them. Because I feel like, I mean, like, it's kind of crazy to me, like, how I don't have to whoop my kids versus how many whippings I got growing up. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking about damn near every day. You know what I mean? Like, countless. And now, since I'm the one, like you, I get in my children's minds and like basically work with how they think. I rarely have to do that. Rarely. Right. It's rare. And I'm talking about versus me when I was a kid. Like, nobody sat down and reasoned with me, you know what I'm saying? Or got me to think about things from a different perspective so I could understand. It was more so, what up? And it's just like, how am I supposed, like, now that I'm older, I'm like, was I supposed to learn? You know what I'm saying? Based off of that, like, you have to teach these children. And I had that same exact moment with my daughter. I was just like, how old am I? Do you think that she will be smarter than you now at my age? Yes. Okay, then.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Like, yeah. It's simple. And she was like, oh, okay, I understand. You know, and that's how we raise children to be brilliant, to be, you know, to think, yes. You know, think before they talk, think before they react. You know what I mean? Instead of just like lashing out at them but for their own ignorance.
100%.
It's like, man, we have to understand these people are ignorant. Their brains aren't even fully developed yet.
Right. They're not even fully developed until we're in our mid-20s, man.
Yep.
Right? Like, we can't even fully process cause and effect until we're in our mid-20s.
Right.
I mean, it's like, how about we just take that in consideration when we're building systems around these kids? Like, this is why I keep saying we are in an emotional revolution, because the whole, like, tough love, like, you just got to push through. Humanity needed that in order to evolve and create societies. And right. So if you, like, I have some homeboys who are anthropologists, they might not be practicing anthropology anymore as an academic, but they still have a PhD. They're black men, so there's one brother I know, he's a black man. He's a co-owner of the largest black owned consulting firm in North Carolina. It's been open for 19 years, man. He's a good homeboy of mine. The brother is brilliant. He's got a PhD from Duke in anthropology, man. Right. Now, unlike me, he didn't wait till later in life. He went straight through. Like, he went to undergrad and he went straight through and got a PhD in that. So I was asking him one day, man, when like some stuff was hitting me, I had this idea about how people evolved and like this whole emotional evolution and revolution kind of thing that's going on. Mm-hmm. So I had this idea that, like, before there was written and verbal language, how did people communicate with each other? It's a lot of different ways we communicate with each other. But one of the ways was abuse and manipulation. Mm-hmm. And I asked him that. I was like, hey, man, before there was humans with written language, like, how did we evolve? Like, how did we communicate? And he said, like, abuse and manipulation are one of those ways. So it's exactly what I was thinking. I went back and I had read some stuff, but it makes sense. Think about when we were kids, we used to watch the cartoons and it was a caveman that would hit the cavewoman on the head and then pick her up. And that's abuse and manipulation, right? That's what that is. So society had to put these rigid boundaries around this stuff. Like, if you're a Christian, you look at the Old Testament, you look at Leviticus, it's just a whole bunch of rules. They're not like holy rules. They're rules to just manage a general society so it doesn't fall apart, right? Mm-hmm. And so society is really, like, human evolution, in my opinion, is really about emotions. Emotions are what separate us from a gorilla. Like our emotions are deeper and more complex. And because of those deeper and more complex emotions, we create different tools. We solve problems in different ways. We build society and communities in different ways. Not everyone has the same emotions.
Right.
Not everyone has the same volume or intensity of emotions, right? Mm-hmm. And so some of us, like people like me, and it sounds like you and definitely your kids and my kids, we got a lot of emotions, man. We got a lot of emotions. And we have, and I have, man, I am an intense brother. It could be intensely serious. It could be intensely funny. It could be intensely whatever. I am intense. My emotions are intense. And I used to be embarrassed about that. I will never be embarrassed about that again, because that is part of my brilliance. I am emotionally brilliant. And I'm going to tap into that. But you have some people who are limited. That's okay. We all have strengths and weaknesses.
Right.
But right now, we're in this place in humanity where we don't have to fight over land. Mm-hmm. We don't have to fight over resources. But we are, because some people cannot move out of that mentality. That is what we're trying to do here, man. That is what we are trying to do right now.
And so speaking of that, how do you protect your emotions being an intense person? Like, is there any boundaries that you set, or like how you prevent? Like, say, I'm not going to go over here because I know I'm going to feel this way, you know, but then there's people out there that aren't as intense or as emotional that could deal with certain things. And I had this conversation last night with one of my friends. She was talking about how her dad could be around somebody that did him wrong, right? And she was like, I don't want to do that. I can't, you know, and I was just like, you know what? And that's okay. Because for some reason, he's not as emotional as you, and he could just be around people that, you know, had done him wrong or whatever. Me, I'm like, man, F everybody. You know what I'm saying? But that's more so protecting my emotions from feeling bad. And I was thinking, I was like, so I'm a naturally aggressive person, and I have a, you know, some called anger issue, right? And so I was thinking about this. I was just like, we're angry for a reason. Things irritate us for a reason. And anger is not a good feeling. You know what I'm saying? So if something or someone is making me angry, and I'm not angry all the time, it must be my brain protecting itself from something. You know what I'm saying? And I broke it down to her this way. I was like, if somebody was to call you fat or call you this or body shame you, you would get mad at them and try to lash out at them for the sole reason of them making you feel bad. And your mind is telling you, you shouldn't feel this emotion. You have to check them, or you have to not be around them, because this emotion does not feel good. You know what I'm saying? But then there's some people that'll walk around and say, I'm fat, I don't care. Y'all could tease me, look at me dance, wiggling my stomach in front of y'all. I know y'all laughing at me.
Look at me play the flute.
Yeah, you know, exactly. All that. Yeah, I wasn't going to say no names. That name did pop up.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, right? Like, we're taking words back, right? I feel this way about crazy, right? People have taken fat back. People have taken, that sounded funny. Like, I wasn't talking about fat back. People have taken the word fat back, right? People have taken word, you know, they have taken nigga back. They have taken, what's the other? I'm having a blank. A disability. They've taken that back. They've taken deaf back. There's the deaf community with a capital D. Yeah. I'm trying to take crazy back right now, okay? Because someone like me 80 years ago would have been labeled crazy. That's just a fact. I had an uncle who died in the early 90s. He was diagnosed with schizophrenia. I don't believe he was schizophrenic. I think he was autistic, and I think he had antisocial personality disorder that runs my dad's side of family. And so does narcissism very heavily. And so there's reasons for that in groups of people who experience marginalization, like Black folks. Like, you're getting the crap beat out of you as an enslaved African. You're going to have to develop some sociopathy in order to tolerate that and not let your emotions drown you, right?
But
you're getting told that you're less than human, that you're not capable, that you're not intelligent. You're going to have to develop some narcissism in order to have some confidence, right?
Right.
But there comes a time where we have to learn to let go of that, because it turns us into monsters, right?
You know, it's funny that you say that, because
go ahead.
My family grew up in South Central, and I talked with my aunt about it, and I was like, a lot of us have a narcissistic trait. But then it was like, you know, growing up out there and seeing how everyone talks to each other, you kind of have to develop a narcissistic personality to feel good about yourself. Because look at everything Deion Sanders. Around you is like fucked up. You know what I'm saying? Like you could turn into a crackhead, gang violence, all of these different things. And so it's easy. Like, cause my wife is a psychologist. I've read the DSM-5 about narcissism. She pulled it out, pointed at it, and was like, read that. And I was like, oh, shit. You know what I'm saying?
Why did she tell you to do that?
You know what I'm saying? Hey.
Right. So here's the thing. Go ahead. Finish your point.
But that's basically, like, I had to develop it because I was growing up in a household where people were only talking negatively about each other. You know, there was no celebration of success. You know how it, like what you said earlier, it's like you, like for some reason, because I also had this conversation last night. It's like if a black person was to talk about their kids, they will say, oh, they're bad. They're driving me crazy. They're this or that. Oh, and you first thing you think about is a way to negatively connect with that person. It's like, it's crazy because I've had that same mentality and I would go around the others and I'll talk to them like I'll talk to black people and they're looking at me like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy?
Exactly.
Like, why are you talking like this? Why are you saying what? And I would be like, I thought this is what people talked about, but I could feel their energy shift when I would talk. You know, and now it's like, I walk my kids to school. Hey, how you doing? Have a great day. Happy Thursday. This is that, and the third. Hey, man, how you doing? You know, it's all good energy or positive affirmations.
Or it's negativity cloaked in disguise under positive. That's what I realized about all these white spaces is that toxic positivity is just the other end of the spectrum of it too. And so it feels nice and comfortable on the initial. And then when you get in here, it's like, wait a minute, these people are calling me nigger in their head, right? And so it's like, they're smiling through their teeth while they're saying it. So like the thing, okay, man. So here's what I'm going to back up and say, like every single person has narcissistic traits. Everyone has narcissistic traits. Some people have more, some people have less. It takes a certain combination of those with a certain level of intensity to be a clinical level narcissist, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone has sociopathic traits, which we would call antisocial personality disorder. Like if you ever just be like, have the feeling like, man, you know what? F that. I don't care about this. That is a certain level of sociopathy. Like we have to have that. It's just that we don't need a huge amount of it, right? If you look at it, this is the issue I have with DSM-5. Everything in DSM-5 is framed as a pathology. It's through a pathological lens. It's like, these are all deficits. These are problems. Mm-hmm. But the reality is every human has aspects of all of those conditions, right? You just might not have enough to have that condition. These are just different ways that brains work. And some of them have, and they all have strengths and weaknesses, right? Narcissism has a strength. You can have a lot of confidence. It also has a weakness. Narcissistic people actually loathe themselves at the same time where they have a lot of confidence and they can be manipulative. And there's other weaknesses. You can be a sociopath. And the strength is that you have less stress in your life because you don't care about as much stuff, right? You're not as tied to things. You're not saying yes to everything all the time, right? But then the other piece of it is you have no empathy. Like you don't know what empathy is. This is not a thing for you. So like if we frame these things as strengths and weaknesses, we can have a better understanding of them. Ooh, going back to the question that I had missed, this is one of the ways that I balance my emotions is I recognize that you don't grow up in a narcissistic family system like I did on both sides of my family and not have some wild narcissistic traits. When I had uncovered that for myself, I was afraid that I was a narcissist. Look, there's nothing wrong with that in general if you understand you are and you are working on that. My counselor who has worked with people coming out of narcissistic family systems for 20 years, she came out of one too. She keeps telling me, I just met with her today, that I'm not a narcissist. Like we keep working through this, but I'm about as close to a narcissist as you can get without being clinical. I just have this like debilitating level of empathy and it prevents me from like acting out too much on those narcissistic traits. Like I don't have the antisocial thing. Like I wish I felt less, man. It's a joke at how much I cry at movies in my family. You give me a movie and I'm a cry at it. I'm a very sensitive, emotional person, but I'm also a brother who's got crazy hands too. Like, so it's like, okay, yeah, I'm emotional, but test me and let's see how far that goes. Yeah. Right. And so for me, oh man, I don't always do a good job of it, man. I don't do a good job. So like an example I give that I've been giving in some talks recently, it's been like grandiosity, man. Like, so one of my toxic traits is grandiosity. That's like one of my biggest narcissistic traits that I have. Mm-hmm. I love like being big, like whether it's like, ooh, here's this big intellectual idea, or like, look at me balling over here, man. Like, I want to be grandiose. Combine that with impulsivity, which is also a narcissistic trend, but it's also a big ADHD trend. I can be very impulsive. So that combination of grandiosity and impulsivity resulted in many bad financial decisions in my 20s.
Oh my God.
Many bad financial decisions early in my marriage, to where my wife, who grew up in poverty, when I grew up, my pops was making over $500,000 a year in the late 90s. It's like we did not have the same.
God damn, in the 90s?
Look, man, when my dad isn't a man. I'm not going to talk about him in depth here because I haven't talked about him since December. It's a whole thing. The man is amazing. He is a narcissist, in my opinion. He is a sociopath, in my opinion. Okay. Yeah. He was simultaneously my biggest advocate. Like, he sat me down and like made me think about stuff just like I did with my daughter, but he also beat the crap out of me too. So I had both of those things going on, right? The man is brilliant. The man is like, I think I'm smarter than him, but he's a much smoother talker. He is much more organized than I am. He's 6'4" and like 250. Like, he's got that height thing. I'm 5'11", man, and like 220, right? And so it's a different world, and I have to use my strengths differently than he does, right? And I tried to imitate. I was a super shy little kid. My dad walks into a room, everyone is drawn to him. The man is an amazing communicator. I've learned a lot of that from him, right? And so that is an example of understanding that nobody is all bad or all good. Like, Mother Teresa was a racist, y'all. She was a racist. Mm-hmm. Nobody is all bad or all good. We all got stuff going on. Now, through life and through crap that happens, we can become more skewed to one side, right? But like, we all have these dynamics. So for me, that grandiosity piece, right? So, but like, when I'm doing, I've gotten better with it. So so that's how it is as a weakness. And I had to recognize that, right? And I had to put some safe rails around that. Mm-hmm. Well, how do I recognize the strength in that grandiosity? All right, man, like, let's say I got a big workshop. Let's say I'm getting paid like $7,000 to go do a 2-3 hour workshop for somebody, right?
Right.
Go out there and I do this workshop, right? Well, that includes my, man, if I'm flying, first class. So y'all can see this black man in first class. And it's just grandiosity. That doesn't hurt anybody, right? If I got to go stay in a hotel, I'm going to get a dope hotel. So y'all can see this brother walking up into this dope hotel. Going to go on Turo and I'm going to find a real slick car to rent too. So I can just drive around and I can pump some trap music. man, this brother listened to trap in a dope car, in a dope hotel. And he out here educated. I do that to pump up my confidence. So when I walk into that workshop, I'm on. That mm-hmm. doesn't hurt anybody. Mm-hmm. That is how I lean into my grandiosity as a strength. And then I recognize my grandiosity as a weakness when it's time to manage the budget at home, right? It's time for me to say, I don't need that $2,500 computer. This $1,200 computer works just as great as I need for everything that it is. And I'm going to stick with that. You know, so like that, to me, that is how I manage those emotions, is I have to first accept that I have them. Mm-hmm. Then I have to work on not beating myself up because I have them. Then I have to work on those strengths and weaknesses. And I just address those strengths and weaknesses. And it's not always like, look, man, every once in a while, I still make a very bad decision with money. Okay. Like, it happens.
Man, I'm that same type because I've learned that I have ADHD, and it makes sense. You know what I'm saying? But then also narcissism because of the way I grew up. So I'm like battling both, but then I have to be careful on how I operate, what I do every day. You know what I'm saying? How I think, what I listen to and things like that. Because I was the type of person to be like, man, all y'all scared? Fuck it, I'm gonna go first. Boom, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, like I was that, you know, I'm still that guy.
Right.
But then it's like, you have to really know yourself and put that energy into things that could like make you productive. You know what I mean? Because some people be like, man, if I'm getting a car, I want the nicest car. I want this. I want that. And man, don't have me have a lot of money because I'm going, you know, I'm going off. You know what I'm saying? It takes a lot of discipline for me to be like, you know, like say there was one time, right, where me and my friends had all drove to Vegas and we got there at night and the check-in was in the morning. And they were like, okay, we're gonna sleep in a car and then just check in the morning or whatever. And all of them were cool with it. I was like, man, fuck that. I'm not sleeping in no damn car. Are you crazy? Like, man, I need a room, you know? And it's just like, you know, and I learned that like the way that they operate is different from me, you know? But then it's like, say my dad would say the same exact thing. You know, my dad will be like say for him, right? And for me. Like we were looking at houses one time and some of them were in the desert, you know, I'm in California. So some of them were in the desert and he was like, man, fuck that. I'm not living in no fucking desert. And I was like, shit, me either. I can't stand the heat. But some people are like, the houses look good. It's cheap. You know what I'm saying? Right. Is this and that. I think I want to move there. Me and him, like, man, I don't give a fuck what we got to do. We're not about to live in no desert. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah. And it's like, that could be a superpower. You know, but then also it's detrimental in some kind of way. But then it's like you just have to know how to balance these personality traits that you have. Like for me, there's nothing wrong with thinking big and doing big things and, you know, thinking like that. But for some people, when they hear me talk like that, they're looking at me like, this dude sounds insane. But then it's like when I really brought into fruition some of the big shit that I've talked about or that I dealt with, I wasn't crazy then.
Exactly. I needed that grandiosity for those big ideas to help push me towards this big thing, man. I tell people I have a PhD, they're like, why? Why do you have all these degrees? I'm like, look, man, because I don't work in a normal way. And when I walk into a room, I need to be given the benefit of the doubt. And so having all this education and these degrees, people give me the benefit of the doubt when I walk into the room. And I'm just going to be real. That's the main reason why I got it. I wanted to double down on my strengths. I wanted to understand my strengths. And I wanted to be able to walk into any space. I'm a black man, almost, with a PhD. Not almost black man, almost PhD. I'm definitely a black man. But like, you know, I'm a black man with a PhD. When I walk into a space, I get the benefit of the doubt, man. And like, I needed that because the way I present makes people like, he's saying some stuff, but I don't know. But now they're like, oh man, he's saying some stuff. Nothing's changed. The only thing that's changed is some letters at the back of my name, right? Man. And actually, going back to something you said earlier, you were talking about like this negative way of communication in these family systems, which was 100% how I grew up. 100% how I grew up. I remember we was on a fishing trip. I wasn't on this fishing trip, actually. My dad and like my uncles and cousins was talking about it. But they was just ragging on each other, man. And like one of my male cousins is real fat. And so like they got a little container on the fishing boat and they were like, hey man, we taking up a collection to help our cousin here get a breast reduction. Right. Like they just always, and it was hilarious. It was hilarious, but they are always just ragging on each other. And it's like, well, you wonder why you have low confidence and stuff.
Right.
So let me go. So Dr. Beverly Tatum, black woman psychologist, Dr. Joyce DeGruy, right? Joyce DeGruy is the person who came up with that theory of post-traumatic slave theory. And she came up with it like, I don't know, in the 90s or early 2000s. And people laughed at her when she created it. And now people get it because we see that significant severe trauma literally gets passed down through our DNA.
Yeah.
That's what Dr. Joyce DeGruy was saying, and y'all laughed at her for that, right? And so one of the things that Dr. Beverly Tatum and Dr. Joyce DeGruy were saying was, for black people, when we were enslaved, that is how we protected our kids. Oh man, hey there, girl, you got a nice young boy there. Oh man, he's horrible. He ain't good. You don't want him. That's what we did. That's how we protected that's how we protected people. But we haven't made the pivot to be like, oh, we don't have to do that anymore. That's where that
came. Right.
Like we don't have to sit here and rag on each other. I also think like playing the Joneses, like playing the dozens that black people do. I think that was a self-taught way to have some checks and balances on our narcissism. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey man, we're gonna rag, because it don't matter how successful you get. You go home with your black family, and I'm still Big Head Wesley. Right. I'm still this little boy that did all these crazy, and I need that humbling at points in times. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's this is what happens when we embrace this thing, man. Like, these aren't, yeah, these things got negatives. And when people hear that word, narcissism, or you're a sociopath, they're like, oh, they get mad. Hey, man, don't get mad. Just look inward. Diagnose that. Like, work on that. Read about it. Learn about it. Understand how it's a strength and a weakness. And own it, man. Like, we are.
That's what I did.
This is what we're trying to, like, don't get.
Because there was no denying it.
Emotional learning so people can deal with it.
There was no denying it for me when that DSM-5 was slapped on the table. Because it was like, and she was just like, wow, I'm surprised you didn't have any put. I'm like, shit, it's right there. You know what I'm saying? What can I say? And I might read it after this and be like, damn, man, I really have all of these different. But then it was just like, okay, how can I use this to my advantage? Because there are people that have these traits that are very successful. There are people that are bipolar that are very successful. There are people that are autistic that are very successful. And I love that Kanye West said, I'm not bipolar, I'm a superhero. You know, this is my superpower.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's no denying that, because he creates things that are fucking phenomenal.
He, like, if I'm going to sit here and say that I don't like Kanye's music, I'd be a liar. Like, I'm not into Kanye as the person, but man, that brother, like, I was a black man in undergrad when College Dropout came out. I'm a hip hop head. That was the first hip hop album about the black college experience. And I was black in college. You know how much we were wilding out. He was talking about quitting the Gap to do what he did. I worked at the mall at Eddie Bauer. And you know what? I quit because I listened to Kanye. I was like, I'm not telling people to go out here and listen to Kanye. Like, I don't want, I don't do that. But like, I mean, this was in 2002, you know, 2003, whenever that came out. No,
2004 when that came out.
2004. I graduated from undergrad in 2005, right? And so I was like, you know what? Yeah, I like when he started talking about the Gap and how he hated, I felt the same exact way about Eddie Bauer, and I quit. And I quit, man. And so that was a lesson that I learned. It's like, I don't have to sit here and wait and do these things that are crap. I can just leave and go do the thing that I know that I need to do, the thing that I want to do. You can learn a lesson from anyone. Doesn't mean you have to put that person on a pedestal, right? Yeah. I've learned a lot of lessons from Kanye's music. It has inspired me, but I don't put that man on a pedestal. I'm like, okay, this man doesn't have checks and balances. He's fully unchecked, right? This is what happens when you are buying too much into your own greatness, when you are buying too much into your own brilliance, that is what happens. So on one hand, I think everyone is brilliant, and I think we have to learn how to tap into that. And on the other hand, we got to have some guardrails so that we don't go full Kanye, right? Yeah. So we don't go full Drake, right? Because Drake is a narcissist. Kanye is a narcissist. Like, this is what they are, right? But they have gone... You think about Star Wars, it's the Force, man. They just went on the dark side of the Force.
But the dark side is still a powerful force, though. That's where people fuck up at.
Right, but it's the Force is the Force. The Force is it depends on how you manage and cultivate that force and how it represents in you. If I'm going to manage it and cultivate it in a dark, manipulative way, I'm going to be on the dark side of the Force. If I'm going to manage and cultivate that force in a positive way, I'm going to be on this good side of the Force, right? But even the good side of the Force, they were still narcissists, right? Okay, brother. Do you like read, watch comics at all? Like X-Men, they had that new X-Men 97.
I watched that though. Yeah.
Okay, so you watched X-Men 97.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Magneto and Charles Xavier are both narcissists.
Mm-hmm.
Professor Xavier is a benevolent narcissist. Obama was a benevolent narcissist. Like, you can be a narcissist and say, like think about Charles Xavier was calling these grown adults his children. My children of the Atom. They're not your kids, man. These are full-grown adults.
Right.
He is a narcissist. He was a narcissist. He was controlling and manipulating these kids. He was just doing it in a positive way.
Yeah, for his own favor.
And he wasn't right about everything.
Yeah. Well, but he was doing that for his own favor, you know, and made himself grandiose, you know. And I mean, that's okay because, you know, it worked out. It helped people. But at the end of the day, this is what you were doing. You know what I'm saying? But then it's just like, we need people like that, because that's what pushes the envelope and pushes humanity to do better. You know what I'm saying? Right. But then it gets fucked up where it's like people that have these traits they necessarily don't know how to embrace it and be okay with it and just be like, you know what, this is my authentic self, this is me, I'm gonna be this, it is what it is. Because you have to,
Right.
like, say, you say, oh man, it look like you work out. That's pure narcissism, bro. Pure
Right.
narcissism. Like, I'm 38. Like, come on, that's like, man, I'm not gonna go out with titties or looking weak or looking like this. I don't play a sport. You know what I'm saying?
Same here. That's actually why I started walking, because I used to do super intense workouts. And I'm like, I'm not trying to like go pro in anything. Why am I trying? I'm not, no discredit to anybody doing super intense workouts. But I was like, man, I can go walking and do some push-ups, do some pull-ups, do some squats, and I'm in amazing shape. Like, I'm in 41. I don't look like I'm 41. I mean, number one, black don't crack. You know, number two, I walk. Like, I used to run a lot, but like running, like I would get hurt. I'm like thinking about my gait all the time and stuff. Like walking, I get to be mindful. I get to think about life. I get to work through the shit that is going on that I am struggling with, man. I get to take in the beauty of this world. I get to slow down and I get appreciated. So like so the
I
going
walk two
going
miles every morning, by the way, so I'm with
man,
you.
so your kids are a little bit older than mine. I can't wait till I don't have four, good, thank God, but like I'm like they're a little bit older. When they get older, I look forward to that, man, because like there's another thing, like people think I'm an extrovert. I'm an introvert, but I'm just a little bit of both. And everyone is a little bit of both. I just lean more to the introverted side. I have to have like at least 2 hours to myself every day. And so like that's one of the reasons why I like to wake up early so I can have that time. But my walks, man, I go on like 4 to 8 mile walks. Like today I went on an 8 mile walk, right? And it's
Damn,
just
how
and
long
like
that take you?
I it depends, man. If I do it, like I usually do some videos, and so if I do some videos, I tend to walk a little bit slower. So I'm walking at like 16, 17 minute mile pace. I'm a fast walker, man, because I
That's
had to keep up
fast.
with my dad when I was a kid, and he had really long legs, and he's 6'4", and he was, he's a narcissist, and he didn't care that I had to walk slower. He told me I had to speed up. So I'm a very fast walker. But like if I'm just walking for myself, not doing videos, I'm walking at like 15 minutes a mile, which is like a slow jog at that point. But I'm not huge. I'm 5'11", and I walk with big strides. So it carries me
So
far.
it'll take you like what, 3 hours almost?
Did you do like 2 hours, I think? 2 hours,
Four
is that
hours.
right? Like, so boy, if I'm doing like I'm doing like
8 miles
1 mile
though?
every
That's a
15 minutes.
lot of walking. Lord have
It
mercy.
man, it feel I man, I am a weird dude. I start my workshops like that. I'm like, y'all, I'm a weird dude. I'm a weird dude, man. And we're gonna get down in this. So okay. Going back to another point, man, to make this full circle and like the difference in understanding ourselves and how that looks and when we present. You mentioned Elon Musk. I'm talking about Elon Musk versus Bill Gates, right? You got two white men who grew up in upper class homes. They both grew up in rich homes. I mean, Elon Musk grew up in a super rich home. Bill Gates grew up in a like upper middle class, upper class home out in California. You ever read any Bill
Bill
Gates?
Gates grew up in California, Seattle, right? Seattle.
Yeah, where is Stanford University?
That's in California. You might
And
be
so it
thinking
was okay.
about
He grew up next to
Steve
Stanford University.
Jobs.
Did you ever read any Malcolm Gladwell?
I think I have one of his
So
books.
in Outliers, Malcolm Gladwell talks about this, and he got Bill Gates to he had interviewed Bill Gates to get these details, right? And this is why I will listen to Bill Gates and I will read Bill Gates and I will not listen to Elon Musk and I won't. So Bill Gates was telling this story. He was like, when he was a kid in his upper class home, there was only like computers took up a whole room at that point in time, right? Like, and only four universities in the entire US had a computer. Stanford University was one of those universities that had a computer. Bill Gates and his friends, when they were in like middle school or early high school, would sneak onto Stanford University's campus and sneak into the computer lab to use the computer. They got caught. They're white men. They didn't get in trouble. They just brought the police just brought those white men back to their homes and said, "Hey, man, don't let these young boys do this anymore." That's what happened to them. What did their parents do? Their parents have money. And their parents said, "You know what? We're going to buy a computer for the clubhouse in our neighborhood." Only four universities in the damn country had a computer. And Bill Gates' neighbor, his the clubhouse in his neighborhood, he had 24/7 access to a computer.
Yeah.
And so by the time he went to under, because Bill Gates was a college dropout, by the time he went to undergrad, he was doing computer classes, but he knew more than the professors because he had those 10,000 hours playing on the computer because it was in his neighborhood. And he's like, that is privilege. That's my white privilege. That's my socioeconomic privilege. There's nothing special about me. Yeah, he's smart. He knows how to work hard, but he had all the resources and all the help there. Yeah. He recognizes that he is here because of his privilege. Elon Musk don't do that, man. I can't rock with someone who is not acknowledging that. I cannot. That is like, can't kick it if you can't acknowledge your weaknesses and your strengths. Can't kick it if you can't acknowledge your privilege. I can't do it.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that, like, I've noticed. And, like, say when it comes to my kids, if they're like, I want to play basketball, okay, cool, let's do it. Let's do this. We're going to create the resources for you to do exactly what you want to do, because there's people out there being successful doing what all kind of random shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody doesn't have to be a lawyer or a doctor. There's somebody out there making spoons that's providing a great life for themselves and their family.
Exactly.
Somebody out there painting pictures, you know, making millions of dollars. Because, like, I wish somebody was just like, wow, I like how you like to draw. Maybe we should put them in painting class or do this or do that. Or, you know what I mean? Like, try to exploit what you see me doing that I love already. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, well, like, say growing up, I bought candy and resold it at school. And it was just like, man, like, I could see somebody being like, we're going to invest in the store for you or do this or do that. Or, like, try to figure out how to exploit my gift. You know what I'm saying? Or, like,
we're going to teach you how to be the best dope boy ever.
Hey, man. If dope was selling in my neighborhood, I probably would have been one of them ones, bro. Because
but like, selling candy is the same thing, right? Yeah. It's the same.
No, sugar is the same thing. It was like, and that's why when I listen to drug dealers and music, I'll be feeling it, you know, because I was the one doing it. It was like, what can I sell that people will buy every day that they're addicted to? Candy. Boom. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, and people still remember me for that.
I have my own business. I sell hope and motivation, man, and encouragement, but in the authentic way.
Yeah.
Doing this thing. So when I listen to trap rappers, I feel them because I'm out here supporting myself too. And it's like Nipsey Hussle, man. All I'm about is hustle and motivate. That's what I do. Hustle and I motivate. But for me, what I also had to do was I would find myself in these like dinners. I love to cook for like my friends and stuff. And so we would come over, got a bunch of friends. And when it was only black friends, I have a very diverse friend group. Sometimes I'm like, we're having a dinner, only black folks here, husbands, wives, some food, single people, we're all talking. And I would realize that everyone in this room had exceeded the socioeconomic status from which they grew up, except for me. And in my 20s, it made me feel like a failure. In my early 30s, it made me feel like a failure. But then I had to realize I have understood that I have to change what success means for myself, man, right? And so success isn't me having 15 acres and a 5,000 plus custom built square foot home with a $50,000 soapstone fireplace. This is my dad's house that he has built, right? He's a barn for $70,000. Like, it's not, that's probably never going to be me. And I don't think I ever want that, to be honest. And so I don't now. I had to realize, no, the real gift of what I want is to be able to own my time. This goes back to that conversation you and I were having about the plantation. Is I'm on this plantation, but I can carve out a little space for myself and keep myself safe, right? And it's like, I don't make a ton of money. I make enough to be comfortable. I work 20 hours a week. I could work a lot more and make a lot more money, but I wouldn't be able to manage myself as well. I wouldn't be able to be present for my kids as well. And like, I had a dad who made a lot of money. I don't remember the money. I remember how he treated me, the good and the bad. My kids will remember how I treated them. I have carved out more time and space for me to treat my kids like full, amazing humans and love them. That is success. That is success.
Yeah. I definitely understand that, because I'm like, I'm definitely not where I would want to be. But then I'm like, man, I get the opportunity to walk my kids to school every day.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I could pick them up. I could go to the store and buy some of the healthiest food that I could find. You know what right. I mean? And I would have jobs and stuff like that. I had a job where I had to go in the office, and I was like, God damn, this is a lot of time. You know what I'm saying? Like, shit, right. Like, you don't have yes. time to do anything. You know, it's like, okay, I'm going to go to, like, you can't work out. You can't do anything for yourself, giving somebody 8 hours, like a third of your day. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And to me, I'm like, that is way too much time to be spending working to survive. That is crazy. We could be way more efficient and effective than that. You know, and I talked to a guy from Mexico. He was like, man, in Mexico, you know, we wake up, feed the animals, and then just go back and go chill. You know what I'm saying? Go back to sleep. It's like life isn't all of this work that y'all have to do.
Yes.
You know, it's yes. like, and it was crazy, man. Like my son's tutor was pregnant. She had a baby. And then like, I see her walking with her breast pump, and I'm like, damn, she had to come back to work after 6 weeks, you know? Right. And I'm like, she's left her child to come and educate mine so she could survive. And I was like, that is just so fucked up. You know what I'm saying? Like, that is like, man. And people don't even realize this. I'm like, if we're fighting for any human rights or women's rights issue, it should have to do with that. You yes. know what I'm saying? Like, that is pretty intense. And it was just like, damn, you know, like, that's not even, because that happened to me with my first child. I couldn't even get 6 weeks, you know, but because I was there for under a year, and it yeah. fucked me up, me being at work and my daughter is in the hospital, you know, like, because, you know, her yeah. mom had a C-section, so she had to be right. in the hospital for a couple of, and I was like, I literally cannot be there. You know what I'm saying? And I cried yeah. in my bed. Like, what the fuck is happening? You know what I'm saying? So yes, freedom is so important to me. And owning my time is so important. And I put so much focus and energy and prayers into yeah. that, because that is so valuable. You know, and I have an uncle that's in entertainment that's very popular. And mm-hmm. he wasn't active, you know, in his children's life like they wanted him to be. And I know how that affects kids. You know yes. what I'm saying? Like he bought them cars, gave them allowance. You know, he's still right. rich. You know what I'm saying? But
I always get real salty because my dad made all this money. I didn't get that. And I'm like, man, I just wanted to have had that.
right? Yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah, no, I know what you mean. You know, like he bought them a condo cash. They lived there. Like, I'm talking about all of that. Right. But to them, none of that matters. But to me, that mattered because my dad didn't do none of that shit. You know, I'm like, my dad got me out here struggling. Y'all dad doing this. But then it was just like, yeah, but that comes at a price. You know what yes. I'm saying?
Yes. Comes at a price. Like right now, here's my grandiosity. I need to buy a new car. I want a really balling car. I'm 41. I'm tired of getting the car that I need. I want to go get a balling car. I want the balling car. But the reality is I'm in a situation right now that is temporary and I need every dollar and every penny. And probably this time next year, I'll be making four times what I'm making because of some stuff that I'm doing. I'm like, I just need to be patient, man. I need to be patient. Right. And so it's that push and pull between those things of, okay, I have this, but I can't buy into it at every opportunity, man. And the, that space and time that you get to give to your children is worth more than anything. There is nothing more important in this life except for the relationships we have. That's life, man. That is life. Life is about the relationships that you have. You have a relationship with work, right? And that relationship with work in this country, it prevents us from understanding who we are. It prevents us from loving ourselves unconditionally. It prevents ourselves from looking at our strengths and weaknesses. I got to this space because I started removing myself from work. I start Renee Brooks. I love her. She used to do Black Girl Lost Keys. She did this sticker, guard your yes with your life. Mm-hmm. This is for ADHD, this is for people like us who are ADHD, because we're people pleasers, especially members of the band, Black and Neurodivergent, because chattel slavery was the ultimate form of people pleasing. Right. I'm saying it was people pleasing is limiting what it was, is mitigating what it really was. But that's essentially what it is. Black people were taught to be servants. That's people pleasing. Right. And then we're neurodivergent. And so we want to do that even more. Mm-hmm. We're saying, I was saying yes to so many things, and I couldn't do anything for myself. Couldn't do what I needed to do for my family to be there other than provide and make a meal. But now I get to be there in a different way. So, oh, I remember I was going to say when we had, so my wife's best friend lives in Australia. Her and her, she's black. They grew up here in the US, but they just, she had an, the woman is brilliant. The woman is absolutely brilliant. Like she was part of the, she helped, she was the senior lead for the team for Pfizer that did the clinical trials for the COVID vaccine. Like she was on one of those, like the woman is absolutely brilliant. And
Awesome.
so they moved to Australia for a big opportunity she had. Their kids, their two kids are almost the same age as our two kids. And so in Australia, they get 1 year of paid maternity leave,
Mercy and
6 months of paid paternity leave. So that's a year and a half of leave if you don't overlap that before that child has to go to daycare. And like over in North Carolina, we just got like a few years ago, we were all excited because we got like 4 weeks or like 8 weeks of like paid leave, like for family and stuff. Because FMLA doesn't pay you, it just allows you to keep your job.
right.
So when we had our oldest daughter, I'm looking at that. Their kid's a little younger. And I was like, man, I was so jealous. I was like, man, I wish we would have moved to Australia. I had to take my baby. Like, she wasn't even a year old, man. I had to take my baby. She can do nothing for herself. And I'm giving her to these people to watch while I go to work. Brother, I broke down in my car and cried. I cried like a baby, man. Look, cried like a baby, dropping off my baby, like on the side of the road. I was like, this is not right. This is not right. This is not right. I like, man, like snot bubble cry. I cried. I'm a sensitive dude. I cry a lot, but like, it's not always snot bubble cry. But man, I was like, who knows what happens to this child when we are gone? She is an infant.
Right.
This is not right. We try to say that America is the most narcissistic society that has existed in humans and in human evolution, like period. Right. And so what a narcissistic society does is it gaslights you. Oh, we care about family. Family is so important. Hey, go to work. Go to work. Take your 6-month-old child to daycare. That's not caring about family. That's
Right.
gaslighting. That's
6 week
gaslighting.
old child, shit.
6-week-old child.
You know
That
what I'm
is
saying? It's like
gaslighting.
that's crazy. You know, it's
Exactly.
not pro family. It's just like, but then at the end of the day, I feel like now we have the capabilities to create whatever life we want, you know, with what by harnessing our skills, by using the internet, connecting and networking with people, you know, where we could like say you could have a seminar that could teach people, right? Record it one time and sell it, you know, while
Right.
and just collect the money off of it. You know, however many times that people want to buy it, you know what I mean? And that's the power of it. And we have the opportunity to now like exploit our talents. You know what I'm saying? And that is exactly what you're doing now. And that makes sense because once you go through that, it's kind of like, nah, man, I can't go out like that. Like I there's no way I could live my life like this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Especially.
Let's say leverage our talents, because that word exploit is just is doing some work in my brain that I don't like, man. Let's say leverage our talents.
I'll say, I mean, you can
You
say lever. I like saying exploit. Like you
can
have
say
to,
whatever you want, brother. You a
yeah,
grown man. You
no,
can say
yeah.
whatever you want to say. I'm gonna
I feel you
say
though.
leverage.
I feel you, but I'm like, if you're good at something, because other people can exploit you.
100%. One other people, if you don't understand what you're good at and what you want, someone else will, and they will exploit you. And that is corporate America.
Right,
100%.
right. So
100%.
it's like, why don't you figure out what you're good at and exploit it yourself?
I'm almost there, man. I just like, why don't we figure out what we're good at and leverage it for ourselves so we can work less?
Either way.
Because exploiting feels like I'm going to make myself work 60, 70 hours a week
Oh,
so that
hell
I'm
no.
not around my family and I can exploit. Instead of someone else exploiting me, I'm going to exploit myself. It's like instead of someone else beating me and telling me I'm shit, I'm going to beat myself and tell
I mean,
myself
the
I'm shit. That's the
definition of
way
exploit means to make use of selfishly or unethically. No. Hold on. To employ to the greatest possible advantage.
What was the other one you were reading?
No, I don't know what the
What
hell
did
that was. That was, yeah, that was more so for like the other version of it, which is like basically used as a corporation that exploited peasant labor. But to exploit one's talents is to employ to the greatest possible advantage. You know,
Yeah,
so
no, I see what you're saying. I
yeah.
see what you're
But
saying.
then
I
I
feel
do kind of know that when people hear about it, it's a negative connotation because you're usually hearing about other people exploiting other people for their
Right.
own advantage, which was their
Right.
selfish gain. But then it's like, if you exploit yourself, that's like you really putting yourself on. So that's a, you know, but I feel what you're
My
saying.
autistic brain is super with just with language. I get super specific about it. I got in a
I feel
debate with
you.
my therapist because I'm making a bad decision right now, and I know it could possibly be a bad decision, but it also has like been an amazing thing. And she was using the word wrong. She's like, "Well, you said it was wrong." But wrong carries this thing of morality with it. I don't feel that this decision is immoral. I feel that it's a bad decision. And when we say wrong, the thing that comes into my mind is like, you were wrong, morally, like immorally, you were immoral. And like wrong can mean a bunch of different things. Like you can get
Right.
in a question wrong on a test. That's not immoral, it's incorrect. But then
Right.
you could say that like, hey man, brother, you is wrong right now. And what you're saying is that person is acting and behaving in an immoral way. Those don't exactly carry the same weight, right? And so it's hard for me to get people to feel that because my brain, that's how my like autistic
Yeah.
ADHD brain processes that info. Brother, you use exploit as much as you want. Okay.
No, I get what you mean.
I'm not
Yeah.
using it.
Yeah. I feel what you're saying. Like, I definitely understand because some words have different triggers depending on, you know, the person. You know, some people, oh,
Right.
God,
That's
why
a
would
good
you
way to
say
put it.
that?
Different
But
triggers.
then for me, I learned to just like I'm, it's not the word for me. Cause I think I had this interaction with someone not too long ago. It's not really the word, it's the meaning behind the word. You know what I'm saying? So say if somebody was just like, or what you mean when you're
Yes.
communicating the word. So somebody was
Yes.
just like, you know, okay, you say you're an alpha male. Based on what I think an alpha male is, I am. But then you're gonna be like, oh, well, back in 2000 years ago, the Greeks considered alpha this and da 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 da. You're saying you're that. I'm like, no, I'm saying is this because of based off of my perception, what I think. You know what I'm saying? And my definition of this word and the definition that my peers use of this word. You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, don't say good morning. That means say grand rising. It's like, no, my intention on saying good morning
Right,
means good day or good early time of the day. I hope the early time of your day is good. You know what I'm saying? And so with me, I'm more so look at what's the intention behind the word that this person is trying to communicate.
No,
Because
I
I
can
used to
feel
do
that.
that.
I
I'm
can
be
feel
like,
that.
man, I'm not getting, bro. Because like I could say, you know, you could say, you know, F you in two different kind of ways as a term of
Okay.
like endearment and a term of like this, but it just depends on what style you're saying, you know?
Also why English is a really hard language to learn
Oh yeah,
too,
we
is
all, yeah.
because just
Yeah.
don't always make a lot of sense. But this goes back to what we were saying earlier about reclaiming certain words, right? Like there was nigger, but then we took it and it's nigga and it means something different. And people have different feelings about saying that and not, and that's fine, right? But
Bad.
we reclaim words all the time. I don't track the alpha male stuff, man, because to me it's not in nature. It's a pseudo concept that we made up for this thing that I just don't think is right. I don't vibe with it. But like, I mean, you could reclaim it and it could be something else, but like I have to put boundaries around myself so I don't become Drake. Right.
Yeah,
And
no,
so
I get you.
I don't use
Cause
alpha
say,
male, because if I'm an alpha male, I'm gonna become Drake. And I'm not, I want light-skinned brothers to come back in a good way, man. I don't like we're getting crushed and I'm okay. These dudes need to get crushed. And like I just want us to come back in a good way, man. I'm sorry, but I gotta pick up my kids, brother. I didn't realize what time it was.
No
I did
doubt,
not
no
realize.
doubt. Well, yeah, man. So where can people find you?
Y'all can find me on TikTok at supreme.neck.protector. You can find me on Twitter at Wes_Wade. And if you find me on any of those places, you can find me everywhere else because my link tree is up. And you can find me on LinkedIn at Wesley Jackson Wade too.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Hey, thank you, Wesley, man. This has been amazing. We got to do this again.
I'll do it again. We're gonna talk about this alpha male thing. I feel like we're on two very different polar ends. And look, people can disagree about stuff
Right.
and have good conversations all the time. So maybe we'll do that and talk about this plantation discussion that we was having. So I like talking to people who have different points of view than me, up to a point. you're a brother. If you was a white dude and you was saying that, I'd be like, hey man, we cool.
Hey man, you know how to right. reschedule. We could tap back in, trust me, because I feel like these are topics that I feel like people will like to listen to this. So reschedule, let's get another time in, hour, whatever, let's, you know, make it happen.
All right, brother. Look, man, you have a good one. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, you too.
We hope you're leaving this episode feeling empowered. Remember, greatness is a choice. To stay updated on our latest content and continue sharpening your edge, hit that subscribe button. Let's keep grinding together. Remember to visit militantgrind.com.